Good evening, everyone. Sorry to be late. Who is Yah HaGadol? You. The great forest. Okay, hello Chesed, it's very nice seeing you. And Ruth?
Hi, Tali.
Hi, it's very nice seeing you. And Simcha and Julian? And Eve?
Hi.
Very nice seeing you. Right, okay, so we are going to first of all share the text together. Hello, Eleanor.
Hello.
Right, now let me find the text. Here we are. Right, so this is the text from this week's Parsha. There's actually a double Parsha, Matot and Masei. And this is all from Matot. So we have here the statement near the end of the Book of Numbers, Bamidbar. Umiknei Rav haya livnei Ruvein v'livnei Gad. There were many cattle for the children of Reuben and Gad, atzum ma'od, many, many cattle. Vayiru et eretz Yahzeh v'et eretz Gilad. They saw the land of Yahzeh and Gilad, v'nei ha'makom makom mikneh, and it was a region suitable for cattle. Vayavro b'nei Gad v'nei Reuben. So the children of Gad and Reuben came. Vayomru el Moshe, and they said to Moses, Vel Elazar HaKohen, and to Elazar the high priest, his father Aaron had passed away recently in a previous Sedra. Vel Nesiyei Ha'eda Lemor, and to the leaders of the community, and they said the following thing. So they listed, they gave a list of places, and they said about that, that this land, Ha'aretz, Asher Hikah Hashem Lifnei Adat Yisrael, the land of which we've conquered, which the children of Israel have conquered, God gave them that conquest. Eretz Mikneh, it's very good land for cattle. V'lavadecha Mikneh, and we have got cattle. And so then they said, Vayomru, they said, Imatzanu chim b'enecha, if you don't mind, yutan et ha'aretz hazot lavadecha l'achuzah, let us have this land that we've already conquered. Al tavirenu et hayad, then don't make us go over the Jordan to take the land in the part of Israel west of the Jordan. We want to take this land east of the Jordan. Now Moshe got very upset about this at first. Moshe said to them, Ha'achechem yavol l'milchama v'atem teshuvfo. Will you just sit here while your brothers, all the rest of the Jewish people, go into the land of Israel across the Jordan to the western side, and they battle with all the people there, and you're just going to sit comfortably? Why are you going to disturb the people's hearts and minds from going over the Jordan? In other words, people will say, oh, you're staying here, we also want to stay here. We already had the problem 40 years ago of the spies not wanting to go into the land of Israel, and this seems to be a repeat of that problem, or it could cause that repeat. So I've cut out a long passage where Moses outlines the whole incident with the spies. So, so now the children of Gad and Reuben came back and they said, you know what? We will build sheep pens for our sheep here. We'll make cities for our children. And we will go together with or in front of the Jewish people, we'll go with them, we'll cross the Jordan with them. In Havionum Elam El Mekomom, bringing them to their place, And meanwhile, our children will sit in fortified cities that we will put here, that we'll build here. Lo nashuv el batenu, we won't come back to our homes, ad hitnachel b'nei Yisrael ish nachlato, until the rest of the Jewish people have taken their inheritance. So in other words, we will come as an armed group, we will fight, we will help everyone else, but then we will come back and come back to our land over here. And Moshe said, all right, if you do that, that's fine. So as long as you do not dampen the ardor of the rest of the children of Israel to go into the land of Canaan, fine, you're going to go with them and you will help them conquer the land, and then you'll come back and live over here. Okay, so this is an item of history in the history of the Jewish people and the relationship with the land of Israel. The discourse, which is a discourse from 1969, takes the whole thing and presents it in spiritual terms, that's what we're going to try to be exploring today. Now, because it's the 3 weeks, I'm not going to have my granddaughter playing her piano piece that we normally have, and I'm just looking. Right. Well, so we're going to sing it, and I'm putting the music on the board, so to speak, and you'll see the difference between the way people sing to the way. Now, can you see that? Can you see the music? Can you see the score? No. You can't see the score. No.
No.
Why not? Slowly learning how to. Now you can see it now, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Okay, Rabbi Lou, would you like to sing it?
Mama, 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 mama. This is not the niggin, by the way, that's on the book that's there. So if anybody knows how to read music, it's a different niggin. Oh, you're talking about the rest of a niggin?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Mama, mama, ya, 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 ya. Ay, nara, ay, nara, ya, 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 ya.
Ya, 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 Thank you. Thank you very much, Rabbi Lu. Okay, so now I'm going to find the text that we're going to be studying. And the, here we are. Mikne Rav. Now let's try to share the screen. Right, so I think there it is. Right. Okay, thank you. So this is a discourse of 1969, and it's Matot Masei, as this week, and it will be Shabbat Mevorachim HaChodesh, the time of the blessing of the new moon of the month of Menachem Av. And this is not a edited, this discourse was not edited by the Rebbe. Umikne Rav haya livnei Ruvein v'livnei Gad atzum mo'od, as we read. There was, I'm just trying to find the pen, but I can't find it. So there was a great amount of cattle to these children of Reuven and Gad. Vayiru et eretz, they saw that land that they'd been that they had conquered, that the Jewish people had conquered. V'hineh makom makom miknei, it was a place of cattle. Vayomru, and they said to Moses, etc., Yutanet ha'aretz hazot lavadech la'chuza, give us this land. Al tavirenu at hayaden, don't make us travel over the Jordan to settle. Now the Rebbe quotes a discourse which was said 100 years before the time that he's speaking. He was speaking in 1969, so he quotes a discourse of 1869. Lifnei Me'er Shana, 100 years previously. And it explains there, Shoresh Ha'inyan, what's the root of this idea, Mashbikshu B'nei Reuven U'B'nei Gad, why the children of Reuven and Gad wanted to be an Ever Yaden across the draw. So they explained that, Al Piyam B'vor B'maimah Shor Rabbeinu HaZaken, according to something Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains in the discourse, the Inyan Achiluk ben Yosef v'chol Ashvatim, talking about the difference between Joseph and the other tribes. Now, this is a fascinating thing. See, we have two different types of people. Both Joseph and the leaders of the ancestors of the other tribes, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Judah, and so on, they're all very spiritual people. They are the founders of the Jewish people. They're all close to the divine. They all have a relationship with the divine. But there's a big difference between them. And it's explained by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, Shahashvatim, that the other brothers, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and so on, Hayu Roetzon, they were shepherds. Why is that? They chose for themselves a kind of work which would not confuse them in their spiritual quest to be close to the divine. Now this is really what they were seeking to achieve, to be a chariot to godliness. Now, chariot to godliness, the chariot is what is described in the first chapter of Ezekiel. And it describes, yeah?
Yeah, excuse me, there's some strange feedback that is not clear at all.
Okay, if people could maybe mute your phones, please, because otherwise it causes a kind of feedback in the system. Is that okay? Are people able to do that? Is that all right, Simcha?
Yeah, now it's good.
Okay, thank you very much, people who muted your phones. If you want to say something, open your phone and speak. But otherwise, please keep the phone muted. Now, the idea of the chariot described in Ezekiel. So the chariot, that's a very exalted aspect of our Torah literature. In fact, the Mishnah says it's so spiritual there are lots of restrictions about teaching it. Nonetheless, it's the Haftorah. We use it as the Haftorah on the first day of Shavuot, because Shavuot is the time of the giving of the Torah, which is a great spiritual revelation, and the first chapter of Ezekiel is also a great spiritual revelation. Now, the concept of a chariot is something. In a chariot, there is a rider. There's the rider in the chariot. And the idea that a person can be a chariot means that the person becomes, their ego, their self, becomes completely suspended, so that all they are a chariot to the rider of the chariot. And the rider of the chariot is the divine presence within them. So that divine presence within them is their true reality. So the leaders of the tribes, like Reuben and Shimon and Levi and Judah and so on, their quest was to be a chariot to godliness. The only thing is, they knew that they couldn't achieve this if what they were doing was too complicated. They had to be in a quiet realm, shepherds on the mountainside with the sheep. Of course, with sheep as well, there are times that everything gets very busy, but most of the time, it's a very sort of spiritual environment. There's all kinds of, cultural concepts, the shepherd's flute. The shepherd has the time to play on his flute. He's not running around after, it's not like managing a factory. You don't have the idea of the factory owner's flute. Of course, Marx might have further points to make. So they wanted to be a Merkava, a chariot to godliness, Gam be'etas oskam ba'avoda, even when they were working. V'lo yiyu b'vchinat ha'pirut, they shouldn't be separated from godliness. Machmat iskei olam hazeh, because of their activities in this world. So that's the style of Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and so on, that they would be close to the divine by having a job which allows that kind of spiritual atmosphere. Masha'en Kein Yosef, now we're contrasting them with Joseph. Joseph's the one who was sold into Egypt. And first of all, he was working in someone's house, Potiphar's house, then he was put in prison. Then he came out of prison. And when he came out of prison, he was made the viceroy of Egypt. And immediately things became extremely, extremely busy for him. And even before he was made viceroy, when he was the supervisor of this household, of Potiphar's house, he was very busy then. Even though he was involved in worldly matters, as it says, that day when Potiphar's wife stayed at home and everyone else went away, Joseph was there. He came into the house alone in order to do his work. Well, there are two opinions what it was to do his work, and the opinion we're looking at here is lemivdak bekitvei chushbanei. He was going to do the accounts. Joseph was running a very large household, Potiphar's house. It was a lot of accounts to keep. Later on, he was running the whole of Egypt, but even now he is very busy and active. Shahaya tarud ba'asakav, he was busy with this work. V'gam achakach, and later, k'shahaya melech b'mitzrayim, when he was the viceroy in Egypt, haya tarud ma'od. He was very busy. Moshe katov al picha yishak kol ami. Pharaoh said to him, my people will follow your guidance. Umi biladecha lo yarimish et yado vet raglo v'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Without your permission, no one will lift up a hand or foot in the whole country. Shezeh torach rav. That's an enormous responsibility. Bikol makom, nonetheless. Now here we have the interesting thing about Joseph. Lo haya b'zeh shum menia klal la'avodato. This was not in any way preventing in his spiritual service. Shegam be'et shehaya tarud b'inyanei hanhagat hamlucha. Even when he was involved in running the whole kingdom, or chashivat ha'cheshbonot, or calculating the accounts, hinei b'shat ma'aseh, at that time itself, haya mekava l'elokut, he was a chariot for the divine. He had this total sense of dedication and absorption in the divine, even though at the same time he was doing something very active. This is actually an ancient discussion among the sages. The Rambam in Guide for the Perplexed discusses the question whether a person can be dedicated to the divine while he's doing practical activities. And for most scholars before him, it was seen that it's either or. Either you're in a kind of a spiritual environment and a spiritual atmosphere, then you can be dedicated to the divine, or you're busy working. So one way of getting around the problem is that you work, and then when you stop working, you focus back on the divine. But the Rambam does say, Maimonides does say, that there is a possibility, as this discourse said, the case of Joseph, of being dedicated to the divine while one is extremely active in the world. And then he uses a phrase, the Guide for the Perplexed was written in Judeo-Arabic. So it's an Arabic phrase. I don't know Arabic, and I'm dependent on the translators. So the translators say it's an ambiguous phrase. There are several translators. One is Friedlander of the past, and one is Pines, whom I met at some point in the Hebrew University. Anyway, they write, this is an ambiguous phrase. And one way of understanding the phrase is, the Rambam is saying, there is a way to be dedicated to the divine while you're in the midst of activity, but I do not know how that can be explained, how to explain that to you. So it seems that he's saying, I know how to do it, but I don't know how to teach it to you. So that is the path of Joseph. And it's interesting to see it there in the Guide for the Perplexed. Later on, the Hasidic movement was very interested in this idea of dveikut, cleaving to the divine when one is doing daily work. There's a story about Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. He would always present people in a good light. He would always speak well of people, and even if someone apparently was doing something wrong, he would present them in a good light. So once someone pointed out to him a thing that they considered absolutely shocking, and in ordinary halachic terms, it is shocking. What was happening? There was a man wearing tefillin, and he was a cart driver. And so at the same time that he's wearing tefillin, he noticed that his axle, the axle of his cart, needed oiling. And so he'd got a thing of oil, and he was like putting the oil into the axle so that the cart would run properly. And so someone said, what a shocking thing. Look, he's wearing tefillin. When you wear tefillin, you're supposed to be thinking of the divine all the time. And look at that, he's just working on his cart, oiling the axle. So Reb Levi Yitzchak said, what a wonderful thing. Even when he's oiling the axle, he's dedicated to the divine, as we can see by the fact that he's wearing tefillin. He's presenting this as if this person has indeed this deep dedication to the divine, which, you know, if you consider the story, he probably didn't, but Rabbi Levi Yitzchak was presenting it as if he did. So that's the Joseph ideal. So we're here looking at two contrasting approaches. The Joseph ideal is the more difficult step, and that is to be close to the divine while doing practical activities. And the other ideal, the more conventional approach, is that you can be very close to the divine when you're in a spiritual environment. That's which is probably why they build universities with nice lawns and grounds and beautiful streams going through some universities. I remember the university my wife used to work at, Royal Holloway, who had the most beautiful countryside, you know, so that you would be able to think about your wonderful research ideas. Now, Vahainu, that means shekol echad me'ashvatim hayashalem ba'avodato. That means each one of the descendants of Jacob, the immediate descendants, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, each one of the tribes, the heads of the tribes, was whole in his service of the divine. Shaharei Yaakov mitato shleima. The sages say about Jacob, his bed was whole. In other words, everyone was right. Unlike Abraham, who had on the one hand Isaac and on the other hand Ishmael. And Isaac had on the one hand Jacob and on the other hand Esau. But in the case of Jacob, everyone was a tzaddik. Eile shahayu chalukim lishtei tnuot ba'avoda gufa. The only thing is that these righteous, these special individuals, these 12 tribes, they had different approaches to divine service. Now, why did they have this different approach? The reason for this is, lefisha shoresh hashvatim hu mebchinat shneima sabaka debriya yitzira asir. The root of the 12 tribes, now it is the 3 weeks now, in which we remember the destruction of the temple, and we're praying for the rebuilding of the temple, and we're coming up to Tisha B'Av, which will be a fast day commemorating, unfortunately, the destruction of both the first and the second temple. And so the Lubavitcher Rebbe introduced the idea that one does something active in order to promote the rebuilding of the temple, namely to study the laws and teachings about the temple. So the laws and teachings about the temple are written in a number of places. And one of them is in the Book of Kings, which describes how King Solomon made the temple and what it was like. And it describes there the Yam Shel Shlomo, a big bowl, a huge copper bowl, which was 10 cubits across. That's 5 meters across. And it was positioned on 12 oxen. So the 12 oxen are all rump to rump underneath the bowl. And so what you see are the 12 heads of the oxen as a circle underneath the bowl. And these are the 12 oxen. And that was one of the vessels, one of the very special objects in the temple. So what it says here in Kabbalistic terms is that the root of the 12 tribes comes from these 12 oxen. And what are these 12 oxen? They are an aspect of the world of Briya, Yetzira, Asiya, creation, formation, and action. And that is described as Olam HaPerut, the world of separation. V'lachein, and therefore, shaychutam v'hitaskutam, the way that they related to and the way they were busy being yanei ha'olam in the world, was of such a way hayta yechola lifol, was able to have the effect sheyiyu b'vchinat peihud midveikutam belukud. It could separate them from their cleaving to the divine, but often the b'chinat nekava. They were trying to be like the chariot. That means cleaving to the divine in every fiber of their being. But if they are working in the world of separation, and their root is a root which comes from the world of separation, which means they're sensitive to it. If the separation is there, it jangles them up. Umishum zeh hinei, and because of that, kashehutzrachu livcholahem melacha, when they had to choose for themselves work, what should we work at in order to make a living, to feed our wives and children, shaharei, because after all, you have to have a job of some kind. Tiv, it's written, uverachecha Hashem elekecha, God will bless you, b'chol asher ta'aseh. God will bless you with everything that you do. In other words, you have to do something, and then God will bless you. The blessing needs something to rest on in order to give you the blessing. So therefore, b'charu liyot roe tzon. That's why they chose to be shepherds. Shekevan shezoi melacha shenaset michutz l'shon ha'ir. That is a kind of work that takes place outside the sha'on. The sha'on is the terrible noise of the city, the thunder of the city. Remember Thomas Hardy's book, Far From the Madding Crowds, right? He's writing about farmers' lives, far from the madding crowd of the city. So here you have the work of the shepherds, and it's about shepherds as well. So here you have shepherds who are outside the hurly-burly of the city, and so therefore, lo tevalbel otam me'avodatam. Therefore, their work will not disturb them from their spiritual service. So that is the crucial thing, that they're able to serve God in a very spiritual and dedicated way without being disturbed. Masha ein ken Yosef, where's Joseph? He was on a higher level. He's what's called the upper tzaddik. His source is higher than this bowl with the 12 oxen, which represents the three worlds of creation, formation, and action. Joseph came from the world of atzilut, the world of emanation. Shekol ha'inyanim sham ein ba'ofen shel achdut. There in the world of emanation, everything is unified. It's an expression of unity. Iyu v'chiyu ichad, iyu v'gamo ichad, the beautiful Zoharic statement. He and his life force is one. He and his vessels are one. That when speaking of the sfirot, that the life force, that means the radiance which is in the sfirot, is unified with the infinite. And the radiance and the vessels are unified together. God and the vessel, it's all one. V'ad shenikha olam ha'achdut. And in fact, it's called the world of unity. Now, if you start off in that world of unity, then everything you look at, you're able to see the unity in it. You're not disturbed by the hurly-burly. You can see the godliness in it. Shehari gam ba'olam ha'tzilut. Gam olam atzilut nikha b'shem olam. The world of emanation itself, it's called a world. It's called a world. And nonetheless, even though it is a world, hu ba'ofen shel achdut, it's in a way of unity. Of olam achdut, and in the world of unity, lo yishayach inyan echad yafriya v'yabalbel inyan sheni. It's not likely, it won't happen, but one thing will disturb something else. It's all a unified atmosphere. From that perspective, it's all a unified aspect of God. I remember once someone told me a person had asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He wanted to pray with deep concentration in a very spiritual way. And he was in 770 Eastern Parkway. Now, in 770 Eastern Parkway, there's like a, you know, a main minyan at various times. And there are lots and lots of smaller minyanim. And he said he found it difficult to pray with deep concentration because all the time someone over here is saying Kaddish, which he has to answer, Amen Yeheshmei Rabbah. And over there, there's the Kedusha, they're saying, so he has to stand and repeat with that. And there are things going on all around him. So he was very disturbed by this, and he wrote into the Rebbe, and the Rebbe gave a beautiful answer. One davad shebekdusha, one holy thing, doesn't confuse another holy thing. You're dealing with holy things. The Kaddish is holy, the Kedusha is holy, the words of the prayer that you're saying is holy, the contemplation is holy. It's all holy. You're in this continuum of holiness. So if you are looking for holiness, it's all around you. That's how that applies in practical fact, it's in practical endeavor is another question. But this idea, this ideal, that if you're really sensitive to holiness, you'll see that one holy thing doesn't disturb another holy thing. Therefore, for Joseph, making the accounts and storing the corn and seeing how much is in this storehouse and how much is in that storehouse and how much we can spare here, how much we can give there. This lo pa'al perud midvekuto be'elokut did not this cause an interruption of his cleaving to the divine bevchinat nekava in the way of a chariot. V'zeo gam ma shebnei Gad uvnei Reuven bikshu et eva yadin. And that, now we're coming back to the beginning. We're talking about the children of Reuven and Gad who wanted to be on the eastern side of the Jordan. They wanted to be there, makom mikneh, a place of cattle. Kevan shebacharu lahem liyot roetzon, since they preferred to be shepherds. Kedei sheinyanei olam lo yebalbelu otam ba'avodatam, so that the aspects of the worldly affairs, would not disturb them from their service of the divine. Whereas the other Jewish people, they were going to go into the land of Israel. And yes, some of them would be shepherds and some of them would be dealing with arable lands. They would be growing crops and there would be cities and there would be merchants and there would be all kinds of different things. And some would be scribes. That's and some will be teachers. There would be a whole variety of different kinds of jobs and activities. And in that atmosphere, the children of God and Reuven, they said to themselves, we won't be able to survive spiritually in that atmosphere. We want to stay here and be shepherds. Now, I wonder if Rabbi Lu can explain the subtle difference between the children of God and the children of Reuven from the spies who hadn't wanted to go into the land of Israel at all. Now, Moses compares them to the spies. I missed out that part in the text that we were looking at. But he's comparing them. But in fact, there's a difference. So Rabbi Lu, could you perhaps elaborate on that?
Well, maybe we could say, I believe it's in a different mimer of the Rebbe, Biltimover, that the spies wanted a totally spiritual life, a totally supernatural life, as they had in the wilderness, where their needs were taken care of by the manna and by the well of Miriam and by the clouds of glory, ironing their clothes, etc., etc. Everything was a miraculous type of existence, and they wanted total monastic life, only in spiritual things. Whereas the B'nai God, the B'nai Reuven, they were looking for a way within the world, but which is also doesn't require that type of concentration and dedication to the thing. You can do it honestly and fairly, but at the same time, your mind can be kept free. It doesn't have to be involved. So I think that's maybe the subtle difference.
Right, thank you.
I have something else to say about what they thought, but that we, if we, there's time at the end, I would like to.
Okay. Okay, now does anyone else have any questions? Any questions? No? It's all okay? Chesed? It's okay? Makes sense?
Yeah, no questions, thank you.
No questions, okay. Ruth? It's all right?
Oh, I did think of one thing. When you started to talk about the chariot, and I think you were reading something from the text, and then there was an interruption of the feedback from the noise. Was there anything you were going to say that you didn't finish saying because of
that?
No, but
I remember doing it. No, I think I said whatever I wanted to say. I think.
Can I say another nekuda just on what's here? Rabbi Tali?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, in many places in Hasidus, I've seen that the idea that Yosef was superior, he was Tzadik Elyon, superior to his brothers, in the fact that he was able to be in the bustle of the world and at the same time be a Merkava, at the same time be totally attached. Here, the Rebbe gives actually, which you just said it, I mean, it's an explanation of it. Why it is so, because if you are in Atzilus, in that world, everything is one. It means to say that your business pursuit or whatever else that you're doing is part of that one. And therefore it cannot interrupt, it cannot disturb, it cannot contradict where you're holding. And I guess it's a message to everyone. I heard from the Rebbe that today, 200 years ago, 150 years ago, most Jews were living in situations which were more comparable to being a shepherd than to being, you know, running a country. But today, or virtually every one of us, you know, 90 to 100% are in situations where there is so much distraction and so much involvement. And it means that we have the ability. We have been given the ability by the, he said, by the Yosef of our generation, referring to his predecessor, the previous rabbi's name was Yosef, gave us the ability to be able to be in the world. And here is an explanation. If everything that you're doing in your life is not a separate compartment, and a separate division in your life, good and nice, but it's actually part of, not just aligned, but it's harmoniously blended, you know, whatever you're doing, you see it in essence as something which fits in with a person's spiritual obligations, then one is able to be, and the fact that you're in the world, it makes no difference. This is part of my Yom Kippur and my being in work on a normal Wednesday afternoon during the year are both part of the same exact unity, the same Achdus.
Beautiful, very beautiful.
So I have a little question.
Yeah.
You always hear the term tikkun olam, you know, like to correct the world, repair the world, if you will. Are we as Yidden supposed to seek out that? In other words, if we have a job offer to be a shepherd and we have a bunch of sheep, or to get involved in a different way, it's going to be a task, it's going to be hard work, we're going to get a bit, you know, a bit mucked up with the world, shouldn't we choose to choose like the route where we're going to be part of the tikkun? In other words, this world isn't at a stage where we can stop and sit back and relax. So isn't something we should go out of our way to seek?
Right, Rabbi Lou, could you answer that, please? In other words, you got two, as I understand your question, you got two job opportunities. Which one should you take?
It depends on the person and the opportunities, you know, to be able to utilize it. There's a way, and there's a person. Obviously, the normal thing would be to say, give me the job that's not going to make me too preoccupied, which is fine if you know what you're going to be doing with all the free time or that one has. To use it for better, you know, for pursuits. Some people say, I'd rather be an accountant than a lawyer. Because I'm dealing with figures, it's straightforward, it's all measurable. You know, it needs preoccupation, but the minute I go out of the job, I'm okay. And whereas if it's something which has all sorts of, you know, it depends on the individual and on what how they're going to use the time. Some people, it's very valuable for them to be preoccupied. It saves them from something worse.
I mean, that's, I mean, in a way, that's sort of dodging the problem that this discourse is raising, because, I mean, what the discourse is saying is your neshama has to be at a certain level for you to be able to pull it off. And so if you're at some other level, it's not so simple, right?
Well, Eve, what's very interesting is that what Rabbi Lou quoted from the Rebbe is the idea that a person who has a connection to the Rebbe helps, you know, one who is joined to something pure is pure. There's a concept. So the Rebbe enables one, he lifts one up, so that one is in a more, so that one's root becomes a more spiritual root, even though in oneself, one might not be at that level. The Rebbe helps you achieve it. And that's one of the prime concepts in Hasidic thought. You know, the idea that a person will discuss with the Rebbe the work that they're doing, and it might be very, very practical work, or very demanding work. You know, it might be intellectually demanding, but in what's apparently a secular field, you know, it could be chemistry or something like that, apparently secular. Of course, everything really has a sacred dimension to it if you're looking for it. And the fact of that connection enables the person to see what they are doing as something spiritual. This goes back right to the beginning of the Hasidic movement with the idea of people doing business, which means usually, you know, taking commodities from place A to place B, right? You buy whatever it is, you buy shoes in this place and you sell them in that place at a profit. So comes along the Lurianic Kabbalah and everything has got sacred sparks in it. And there were sacred sparks of holiness in the shoes. And you got the shoes in one place and you've now taken them to another place, which is where those sacred sparks have to go. And now the shoes have been sold in that place. You're taking part in a whole spiritual cycle and you've got a role in that. And incidentally, out of that, you're also making a living. This is an
What happens when there's no Rebbe?
Well, the guidance of the Rebbe, which through his teachings, his letters, and through his followers, become a kind of collective guidance which helps the individual make the right kind of decision which are connected with the source.
I see.
You know, that's the Rebbe instituted or encouraged, it existed before, but he encouraged the idea of having a mashpia, person who helps one make decisions and also helps one evaluate what one is doing at this point in one's life. Or, you know, could one be doing more in this area, in that area? And also when it comes to discussions about issues in one's life. helps one to see them in a more spiritual way. And the fact of having the mashpia helps the person make the decision which is the right decision for them to make. And one might write to the Rebbe as well, you know, asking a blessing that I've got this following problem in front of me, and I ask the Rebbe that the step that I make should be in the right direction.
I see. So now I understand why people, forever sort of asking and doing the opposite of what they want to do because they were told to do it.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. I mean, you know, you can sometimes see what the lazy side of me would like to do and what the more, you know, the side of me that wants to face a challenge wants to do.
Yeah. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Right. Now, section Beit. Ach, adayin tzarich lavin, but we still have to understand. What was explained above concerning the difference Ben Yosef l'chol ha'shvatim, concerning Joseph and his brothers, einu maspik levaer b'negeh l'shvatim gufa. It's not enough to help us understand among the tribes themselves, because we have a division among the tribes. What is hachiluk? What's the difference between Ben B'nei God of Bnei Reuven, there's the children of God and Reuven on the one side, who want to have their land here on the east side of the Jordan, L'shah HaShvatim, and the other tribes who are agreeing with Moses' direction that they want to take the land on the western side of the Jordan, the land of Israel proper. V'yesh Levi Zeh al Pimashe Katuv B'Midrash. Now this can be explained according to what it says in the Midrash. Shevet Reuven and Gad, these tribes who wanted to stay on the eastern side, shehirchiku atzman min hagezel, they did not want to steal. Lefichach natan lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu nachlatam, therefore, God gave them their inheritance, b'makom she'ein sham gezel, in a place where there is no stealing. Shenema, as it says, v'hineya makom makom mikne, this place is a place of, it's a place of cattle. Now, this idea, you see, the point is that cattle. The Midrash says the reason why God gave them this part of the land is So we're going to look at this in spiritual terms, but also I think in practical terms, what the Midrash is saying is that sheep which graze on the open land, which actually belongs to other people, the sheep, and so I think that's what is meant over here. Is that the contrast, Rabbi Lou, between sheep and cattle?
It's what?
The fact that they didn't want to... they didn't want to steal, so they're being given a possession in a place where there isn't stealing.
Yeah, well, it was good pasture ground. They had a lot of sheep. On that it says reasons. why they had more cattle than the other tribes. Reuven, because there was the Bukhari, we can fly him.
Right, but it means they're going to take possession of this land and they won't be stealing from other fields.
Right.
You see, in ancient Israel, there wasn't the concept of the common land. Right, so in England, for example, there's the idea of a common. So the common land, everyone grazes. And I think this sort of began in the Middle Ages, that idea. But in ancient Israel, there wasn't the idea of a common land. Every field belonged to someone. So if I have sheep and they're grazing in a field, either it's my field, which is good, or it's someone else's field, which means I'm stealing the grazing from the other person's field. So they didn't want to do that. They wanted to be in a place where the land is pasture land and they will divide it up among them. They will take possession of that land. They've already conquered it. They'll divide it up and they will not be taking someone else's land. Now, that's in sort of practical terms. But the Rebbe then explains it in the discourse in a more spiritual dimension. What this means in an inner way. Just as there is a very negative kind of stealing, which is against the Torah, it's a bad thing, and it's forbidden. Similarly, there's a sacred aspect of stealing. Now, what's that? That's the whole idea of the sifting of spiritual sparks. Since the sparks of holiness are found in all the physical things in the world, the fact of sifting them, taking the sacred spark, which is in this physical thing, who in Yanshok Zela, it's as if in spiritual terms, in a certain sense, you're taking the spark from it. And taking the spark from it is really what we have to do. But it's as if you're taking it away. So it's a sacred kind of stealing. And we can understand this also from a midrash. She'amar Yaakov le'Esav. Jacob said to Esav, listen. Shnei olamot lefaneinu, there are two worlds before us. Olam hazeh, there's this world, the physical world. Olam haba, and there's the world to come, the spiritual realm. Tol ata olam hazeh, you, Esau, take this physical world. V'ani etol olam haba, and I'll take the spiritual world. So they had an agreement. Otasha natal Esav chelko b'olam hazeh. At that moment, Esau said, right, I'm taking this world. And Jacob took the world to come. However, later on, when Jacob came from the house of Laban, and he had cattle and donkeys and camels and sheep and sons and children and servants and maidservants, and Esau saw all these things. And which is from the dew of the heavens and from the fat of the earth, literally. Esau said to him, wait a minute, Yaakov Ochi, my brother Jacob, lo kach amatali, didn't you tell me, shetitol ata, that you will take olam haba, you're going to take the world to come, the spiritual things. Vani etol olam hazeh, I'll take the physical things. Menayim lecha kol hamamon hazeh, where do you get all this money from? What's all these possessions, maidservants, donkeys, cattle? Since Esau claims that this world belongs to him, nimtza, that means shedekichad nitzotzot hakedusha, that our taking of the holy sparks, shenimtzaim bedvarim agashmim b'olam hazeh, which are there in the physical world, in the physical things in this world, who in Yan Shel Gzeilah, as far as Esau is concerned, he thinks you should just be studying Torah and contemplating. Don't deal with the physical world. But if we are in the physical world, we've got a duty to be in the physical world and rescue those sparks. And from the point of view of Esau, you're taking something of mine. The same imagery about taking the sparks out of something is like when the Jewish people left Egypt and they took gold and silver. They asked to be lent gold and silver, and that was really the sacred sparks that they were taking out of Egypt. So there's this process of a kind of a spiritual form of gzela, which is taking place. That they're taking a captive. One takes the sparks of holiness from the enemy. That's the captive one takes. Now, so now the Rebbe suggests as follows. Let's just get a little bit higher. The fact that Reuben and Gad, they didn't want to steal. Hainu, that's part of the whole thing of them not wanting to be involved too much with the material world. They didn't want to be involved with taking these sparks of holiness. By being involved with worldly matters, which will happen if they go into the land of Israel proper, on the west side of the Jordan. So therefore we can understand the two Midrashim together, concerning these tribes. Maima Midrash Anal, one statement from the Midrash, Shehechiku Atzmam and Agezel, that they kept away from stealing, Shemedaber Bishvacham, which is speaking in praise of them, saying it's a good thing. Or Maima Midrash, and another Midrash, which is putting it in a negative way, it's not a compliment. That midrash said that they made the main thing secondary and the secondary thing the main. They were all concerned about their possessions, mikneim, their cattle, yoter min hanefashot, more than they were concerned about their children, their wives and children, because they said in those verses we read that they would make pens for their cattle and then they would make houses for their wives and children. And it should have really been the other way around. Why did they put their cattle first? So that's a negative thing about them. So in fact, the inner dimension, when we talk about the inner aspect of stealing, even the fact that they didn't want to steal is also, it is not in their praise. They did not want to do this work of sifting. So what the Rebbe's done, if we put it in very simplified and maybe coarse terms, the Midrash was saying that the fact that they want to keep away from stealing is a thing in their favor. And the Rebbe's explained that there are different dimensions of stealing. All right, they didn't want to steal in physical terms, but they didn't want to steal in spiritual terms. And that stealing is in fact part of the whole transaction of life, that we are involved in the physical world. And the physical world has captured certain sparks of holiness, and we have to steal out those sparks of holiness and connect them above to the divine. And that's what they didn't want to do. So in fact, the statement that they didn't want to steal has been turned upside down. They didn't want to get involved in the nitty-gritty of what it means being a physical person in the world and taking the spiritual sparks that are there in physical existence and connecting them with the divine. And so that is Behine. Now, Gimel. Behine, because Shama Moshe, when Moses heard Shebnei Ruven uvnei Gad einam rotzim likhanes la'aretz. When he heard that they didn't want to go into the land, kedei la'asok ba'avodat ha'berurim, in order to carry out this work of sifting, they couldn't face that challenge. Mipnei she'yireim, because they were afraid, she'asput v'inyanei olam, that being involved in worldly things, tevalbel otam me'advekut belukut, would confuse them from cleaving to God. Azai heshiv lahem. So what did he answer them? First of all, he rebuked them, which I basically cut out of the passage that we had, that he gave them a stern rebuke. And the now, what this means is, dihine yadua, now it's known. Sha'avodat Moshe. Now here we come to what is the role of Moses, and what is the role of the Moses in each generation? The service of Moses Haita was Lamshik Natadat, to bring the quality of knowledge. There's wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And knowledge is a very profound concept. To bring that quality of knowledge, Gamba Neshamot Shehein Mibchinat Zera Behema. Also to the lower kind of soul. Shezer Mashikatuv Natati Esed Besatra Vempecha. Here is a drash where it says, but when it says, I will give grass in the field, in the second paragraph of the Shema, when it's talking about giving the grass in your field for your animals, that means, since Moses has the quality of the upper knowledge, it's even higher than the world of emanation. Yarlachin, therefore, Yachol Hulaham Shikh Dat, is able to bring that knowledge down, Gam B'Neshamot, also to the lower kind of soul, the Briya Yetzira Asiya, the souls of the world of creation, formation, and action. And that's actually what we were talking about before, that the association with the Rebbe elevates the person. Even though the person himself or herself would be caught in the materiality of existence and would not be able to feel the spirituality which is there potentially. Nonetheless, the quality of Moshe, Moses is able to give us the quality of Da'at, of knowledge, as if we were coming from a higher world ourselves. From this we understand, Moshe noten koach l'shvatim, that Moses is empowering those other tribes. She'imi, that means not Reuven and Gad. She'imi yod shorsha mibchinat shneima sabaka debchia yitzira asiya. Even though their root is from the 12 copper oxen under the laver, the laver, the copper laver that Solomon made. And that means bechinat behemtecha. That's the animal. That's the animal dimension. You see, those, that they are the source of our souls. There are different ways of writing the name Yudke Vavke. And you see, Yudke Vavke is the tetragrammaton. And you can write it in full, which means instead of Yud, you write Yud Vav Dalet. And Hey, you write Hey Hey or Hey Yud. Anyway, there's one way of writing the name that it adds up to the word, to the number 45, Ma. And that has the that is the same as the numerical value of the word man. Adam is also 45. And there's another way of writing it that adds up to 52. And 52 has the numerical value of the name of the word behema, animal. And the idea is that there are different levels of soul. There's zera behema and zera adam, the seed of the animal and the seed of man. Now these are different dimensions of soul. So they're souls from the lower realm, that's the seed of animal, that's the ban, neshamot de ban, the souls from the level of 52, that aspect of the divine tetragrammaton, and also a higher level. So Moshe has the ability to give, to empower those who are on a lower level as if they came from a higher level. So that he has this power to give those souls, even though they have this quality, their root is like the 12 oxen underneath the proper labor. Mikol makom, nonetheless, yuchlu latesek in dvarim gashmiim, they will be able to be involved in physical things, but often in such a way shelo yevalbel otam me'avodatam, that they will not be confused from their spiritual service. Omnam, but b'shvil zeh tzarich liyod inyan shel mesirut nefesh. In order to do this properly, one needs self-sacrifice. Now, I think that the concept of Mesirut Nefesh is needed whether by the group of the Jewish people who went into the land of Israel on the west of the Jordan, or those who stayed on the east of the Jordan. Now, the people who are going on the west of the Jordan, they're going to need Mesirut Nefesh, self-sacrifice, because they're going to have to attack the nations which are there and somehow conquer the land. And so therefore, Moshe taught them the Shema, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And the idea that you should love God with all your soul and all your life, even if it takes your life, that's the idea of self-sacrifice. And so they needed that sense of self-sacrifice going into the land. So that is the group that were going across the Jordan into the western side. But the group that's going to stay behind, they also need Mesirut Nefesh for their service as well. Even for the amount, for the level of work that they're going to do, okay, it's going to be in a reduced way. It's not going to be the same as living in Jerusalem with all the hurly-burly of what's going on. But, and they're going to be in some dreamy place on the Golan Heights or something. nonetheless, they're going to need this extra spiritual dimension of self-sacrifice. So, omnam bishvil zeh, in order to achieve this, tzarich liyod inyan shel mesirut nefesh, they need this dedication, this self-sacrifice. V'zeh she'amar lahem Moshe, that's why Moshe said, if you come on before God and you help your brothers across the Jordan, and you conquer the land, then this land on the eastern side will be your possession. So they have to somehow risk things as well. They have to move to a higher gear. The whole concept of self-sacrifice takes one into a higher gear in relation to God. Then they themselves will also have the special quality that the others had by going into the land and fighting for it. And about that it said, Tova ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. The land is very, very good. And it's very good by going over the land, but going into the land and risking one's life for it. Now, So then there's a discussion of the fact that the eastern side of the Jordan is also really part of the land of Israel, only it's not as sacred as the western side of the Jordan. Okay, so that means they have to have this, we're skipping here. So they had to have that special quality of self-sacrifice for the land by going into the land on the eastern, on the western side of the Jordan, fighting for it with their brothers. And then they come back here. And then this land where they'll be on the eastern side, Tiyeh Ma'alat Eretz Yisrael B'Shlemuta, that will also have the quality of the land of Israel. And so they will be there with the quality of the land of Israel, even though they're on the eastern side of the Jordan. And so in a sense, that's the greater Israel dimension. That's all part of greater Israel. Okay, so now the Rebbe connects with this with something else in the same Sedra. And if we can have a look at it in the Sedra itself, And meanwhile, would anyone like to ask a question? I noticed there are a few points in the chat. Okay, that's just about that's a past thing. So are there any questions anyone would like to raise or points? Okay, we're gonna go back to the text on the Sedra. And we had it up to here. Now I pasted a further level, a further aspect. Now this is actually from the beginning of the Sedra, right? You see this, it's the beginning of the Sedra. So we're going backwards. Because what we were reading before was in chapter 32 of the Book of Numbers, and now we've gone to chapter 30 of the Book of Numbers. Now here we have the rules at the beginning of the Sedra about a person making vows. By Daber Moshe Roshe Matot, Moses spoke to the leaders of the tribes, the Bnei Israel, of the Jewish people, their Mose, Zeh Davar Shetziva Hashem, this is what God has commanded, Ish ki yido nedel Hashem, if a person makes a vow to God, or he shavar shvua, or he makes an oath, leso yisol nafsho, to forbid himself something, lo yachel dvaro, he should not profane his word, k'chol hayotze mipiv yaseh, whatever comes out of his mouth, he should do. Whatever he vows to do, he should do. Now then comes Rashi's commentary. Let's just look at this in English. So he spoke to the heads of the tribes of the children of Israel. Doesn't mean he spoke only to the princes of the children of Israel, not to the people also. But he showed respect to the princes by teaching them first. And afterwards he taught the rest of the children of Israel. Now, in fact, he always did this. What reason is there for scripture going out of its way here to state it over here? Because by specially stating that the laws about vows were taught in the first instance to the princes and afterwards to everyone else, it's teaching us that annulling of vows is really to be affected by one person who is an expert. If someone's made a vow and they're worried about it, the situation has changed, they wouldn't, if they would have imagined that it would be like this, they would never have made such a vow, they're able to come to one expert scholar and he can annul the vow. And if there's no expert available, it can be annulled by three ordinary people. All right, now that is going back into the discourse, that concept. So the Rebbe is gonna connect this with the so here we have the Yesh Lakasha there. Now this can be, so this can be connected. Kolanal, Imasha Katov, B'tchilat ha-pasha, with what it says at the beginning of the Pasha, about Moses speaking to the heads of the tribes, about people making vows, and the idea that the annulment or the release of a vow takes place through one expert, one sage, who is able to uproot the vow from its beginning. Now what is the vow? The vow is separating from the world. As the sages say, the vows are a barrier or a surrounding of precious separation. And separation is the quality of bina, understanding. Because of the quality of understanding with which, now in the sphere of wisdom, which is higher than understanding, is a sense of selflessness. Whereas understanding already, there is the sense of self. And once you get to that level where there's a sense of self, then it's possible that there will be a vow. Why should there be a vow? Because the person wants to separate from things that are really permitted, in order that they shouldn't confuse him and drag him down from his level in service of God. So he makes vows. He's not going to eat this, and he's not going to do that. He's going to keep away from this. He's going to keep away from that. However, the wise man, one wise man, one expert, is able to uproot the vow. Because from the point of view of wisdom, which is selflessness, and selflessness means appreciating that God is He and there's nothing apart from Him, and that is the level of wisdom, you don't have to worry about the world. The world is not going to confuse you. You'll be able to be focused on divine service. Don't be afraid of the world. I have a friend, and my friend has a very, very spiritual brother. So he's very spiritual. He lives in the same part of London that I live in. And I once needed something from him. He had something or other which his brother had left with him, and he had to come to my house and give me that thing. The only problem was, from where he lived to my house is the long open boulevard called Stamford Hill. And it was the height of summer. And this young man did not want to walk along that boulevard because there might be people who are not dressed completely covered up as he would have preferred. So he could not walk along the straight main road, and he had to go some winding turnings in order to get to my house, like, you know, on kind of parallel roads. And he was really an example of this kind of attitude, a very, very spiritual person, very profound, very spiritual person. But he could not take the involvement with the world that would be implied in walking along that road in the summer, on a hot summer's day. So there's now, for every person, there can be, you know, some aspect of that in one way or the other. I'm reminded of, people who start doing a sort of, practical, to what extent does one get involved with the practicalities and filling out forms and the course material dimension. People very often choose just the spiritual. So here, what it's saying is, the wise person, the chacham, the wise person releases the vow, because from the point of view of wisdom, there's only God and everything. There's no need to worry at all. You don't have to separate from permitted things. And in fact, the Rebbe quotes a famous statement in the Jerusalem Talmud, even though one's very circumspect, quoting this: a person will in the future have to give an explanation of everything he saw, which he didn't eat. He saw this nice fruit and he didn't eat it. He's an ascetic. So why did he do that? So it doesn't mean, there's still a strong ascetic strain in Chabad Hasidism, but nonetheless, there's this concept that the person needs very often to be involved in things of this world. And by doing that, one is elevating them to godliness. And so that's why Moshe speaks to the heads of the tribes. And another way of understanding that, apart from what we just said, is that also these tribes, they are the midas, they are the emotions of the person. And the heads of the tribes are bina, understanding, which is the root of the emotions, the mother of the children. And Moshe is the quality of wisdom. And so that's really what, so this gives the empowerment from Moshe to the heads of the tribes that they should be able to annul these vows so that people will not have to keep away from the permitted world, but in fact they can get involved with the world. Now, what does all this teach us? That we all need two aspects of service, like the children of Reuben and Gad. They took their inheritance on the eastern side of the Jordan, but at the same time, they went with self-sacrifice to help the others on the western side. Now, these are two aspects of service you can compare them to that of the patriarchs and of their children and grandchildren, the tribes. And that means the service of Yehudi Elah, the ultimate unity that there's only God. That's a very exalted level. That's like the higher level. And then there's the Yehuda Tator, the lower unity, that there is a world and that lower world has to express godliness. And so what we have to try to do is to express both those dimensions that we need, because really the main part of the service of God is the lower unity where we're involved with the world. But in order to do that, we also need the selflessness of the upper unity. Now, in the saying of the Shema, Rabbi Shneur Zalman writes in the second section of Tanya that saying the Shema is like the upper unity, and saying Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Eloylam Void is the lower unity. So we need that dimension, that the double dimension. We need to be able to go to see beyond the world that there's only God, and at the same time we have to be able to see a world and bring godliness into the world. And that is really our task, to bring godliness into the world. Thank you.
Thank you. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you. That's very good.